Stuff Podcasts.
Kia ora. In case you missed it, this podcast is about sex. There's also some swearing, discussion of body dysmorphia, gender dysphoria, and other body-related stuff. Oh, and really awkward nude modelling. Some names in the series have also been changed. This podcast was made with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Do you remember your sexual awakening? Those first curious flushes of blood, the tingles and flutters and throbs? I do. I blame David Bowie. Well, actually, I blame Jareth the Goblin King in the 1986 musical fantasy film The Labyrinth. God, the power of that man. His silver eyeshadow and shining mullet. His pants, so tight. And all he wanted was to enslave his teenage queen.
Look what I'm offering you. Your dreams.
By the way, David Bowie was 39 when he played Jareth, and I was 8. So I was too young to really understand what was happening, but I knew it was something interesting. The Goblin King was dangerous and powerful, like a whirlpool pulling you closer and closer. Terrifying, but also tempting. The idea of letting go, of being consumed. You can imagine how all this played out when I was a teenager and the real crushes started. God, isn't crush just the perfect word for it?
Crush.
A crowd of people pressed closely together.
Crush.
To violently subdue.
Crush.
To compress or squeeze forcefully so as to break, damage, or distort in shape. The shapes I've distorted myself into in order to be loved.
I became uncomfortable to make others comfortable.
Disordered eating, relentless like self-flagellation by way of aggressively exercising to the point where I nearly had kidney failure.
When I was 15, being overwhelmed by the thought that I was gay, puking in the toilets.
The struggle is not being born wrong. The struggle is being told I was born wrong.
Gosh, we are so many people's cup of tea. We just don't give ourselves the luxury of thinking about it in that way.
I'm Melody Thomas, and this is The Good Sex Project, Episode 2, The Glass Closet. You can't love someone else until you love yourself. Ugh, what an annoying saying. Partly because it sounds like a soap commercial, and partly because it's true. Though it's not entirely true. Because actually, there's a lot of people who fall in love before they learn to love themselves. I should know. Loving others is easy. Loving this gal? Oh, that's a whole nother kettle of fish. But it is true that love built on unstable ground can be a little shaky. Like, say your self-worth is just hanging on by a thread. You can fall in love, but will you ever really trust them when they say they love you if you can't see what there is to love? Or if you were neglected or abandoned as a kid. As an adult, you might come to find a home in another person, someone who makes you feel safe and wanted. But unless you go back and sift through those old hurts, figure out what stamp they left on you, and really come to understand that it wasn't your fault, will you ever really trust that your partner isn't one day just going to up and leave? Learning to love and accept yourself, all the good stuff, as well as the messy, difficult bits, it's a valiant quest, and it makes for better relationships. Because from that space, we can hear feedback about how we've messed up without spiralling into hating ourselves. Like, yes, I did something bad, but I'm not bad, and I can try harder. and we can ask for the things we need from a place of security, because we know we don't have to be perfect to deserve respect and care. In this episode, we're going to follow three people on their journeys to self-love, self-acceptance, and self-worth.
I just thought that as soon as someone realised about my skin condition, that they would no longer be interested.
In other words, being comfortable in their own skin.
Do I say hello as well? Okay. Hi, I'm Amy. I'm from Dunedin. I'm 22 years old, and I am an individual with a rare skin condition called lamellar ichthyosis.
Lamellar ichthyosis affects about 1 in 100,000 babies in the United States. We can't find New Zealand-specific data on it.
I don't know anybody else in New Zealand that has the condition. There probably are people, but it's just so rare I haven't happened to run into them.
There are about 20 different types of ichthyosis, all of which lead to dry, itchy skin.
I don't sweat on a lot of places in my body, except for my face, my hands and feet and under my arms. So I'm very dry at times. It takes longer for my skin to shed than the average person. And so it sort of stays stuck down for longer, if that makes sense.
By the way, the word ichthyosis comes from the Greek ichthys, which means fish, because sometimes the skin can appear scaly.
I'll show you my arm if you want to see. Like, you can see.
Yeah, right, like almost like you've had a sunburn or something.
Yeah, it's like a sunburn, yeah. And so that can be, sometimes, you know, it can be flaky, and that can be an issue as well.
But Amy's ichthyosis is milder than others.
Some people experience chronic pain and joint issues, bleeding, scabbing, all of that kind of stuff, which I'm lucky to not experience.
Still, it requires a lot of care to maintain.
Yeah, I can tell you my routine.
Please
if you
do.
Like. Okay. So basically, I shower every day and then I do a full body moisturise. So I have a moisturiser that I use specifically for my face, and then I also have a body moisturiser that I've used since I was a wee baby. And so that's every day, head to toe in the morning. And then I do a lot of other little self-care things too, like exfoliating and cleansing and just any little thing to try make my skin feel better, I will definitely do.
Amy is a really wonderful and confident person, and she's only 22, so that's even more impressive. But she wasn't always this way.
Oh, yeah. Teenage years were rough.
Amy was in a group with the popular girls, but she didn't really feel like she fit in.
They all pretty much had boyfriends. It filled our lunchtimes, conversations about their boyfriends and what they did in the weekend and all of that stuff. And, you know, I would just sort of sit there and just slowly feel myself close in more and more and more, because A, I wasn't having those experiences, but B, I didn't really know if I ever would. Like, I seriously thought that I would be a catwoman.
Not like the Michelle Pfeiffer spandex catwoman. She means a lonely old cat lady.
Yeah.
Did you talk to people around that time about, like, even your parents? Like, I'm scared I will never be loved. Like, that's such a big thing to grapple with on your own.
Yeah, it was kind of like one of those things that was my deepest, darkest, most internal fear, that even with my best friend at the time, I would struggle to describe it, because it just felt such a deep, like, feeling of shame. I felt very ashamed and just kind of angry at the world as well, because I was like, why me?
It's really heartbreaking to think of Amy surrounded by her friends but feeling totally alone and trying to make herself smaller so she didn't attract attention. And she didn't just shrink herself around her friends, she was always doing it.
If I was wearing a pair of shorts and a stranger would stare at me on the street or tell her kids, like, don't stare, it's rude. Like, I wanted to kind of take that experience away from people. I became uncomfortable to make others comfortable by wearing, you know, long-sleeved pants on hot days and just covering up as much as possible.
But you're right, that is work that you're doing to make other people feel comfortable at your own expense.
Yeah, and it didn't really benefit me.
Amy is charming and thoughtful and really funny, and she probably always was, even in high school. So even though she was trying to make herself invisible, she still got noticed from time to time.
And I would have, you know, people that would have crushes on me and want to date me.
But she never let it go anywhere.
Because I was too afraid.
We're going to return to Amy, but first I just want to talk to you about this thing called body positivity. And you might already know this. All good, I'm going to be quick. The body positivity movement grew out of the fat acceptance movement of the 1960s, which had black and queer women at its heart who understood the racist and sexist origins of fat phobia and fought really bravely to challenge it. Today, body positivity champions acceptance and love for all types of bodies, rather than just those that conform to whatever society's beauty ideals are at the time. This includes fat bodies, disabled bodies, gender diverse bodies, the bodies of people of colour, all the bodies. And it's a great thing. Back when I was a teenager in the late 90s and early 2000s, we had nothing like it. In magazines and ads and movies, the message was that the only acceptable bodies were thin, white and hot, and there was no alternative. Our plus-size role models, I shit you not, were Drew Barrymore and Alicia Silverstone. Watch Clueless with that in mind and tell me how you feel after. So yay, body positivity has arrived. Except it doesn't exist in a vacuum. It exists in a fraught, objectifying culture that still relies on making us feel like crap. And not just women, men too. For every advertisement showing empowered, joyous and diverse bodies, there are 10 or 20 more where that thin or muscled, white, hot, able-bodied ideal remains. So yeah, we get these long overdue messages like love yourself and you are great no matter what your shape. But they're these teeny tiny little life rafts in a sea of images which still reinforce the same old beauty standards. And if you don't feel great about your body, well, keep it to yourself. We're body positive now. Didn't you get the memo?
Yes, very much so.
We're back with Tom now, who talked to us about performative sex and alcoholism in the last episode.
Social media doesn't help, but it's not other people giving a fuck about what you look like. It's you giving a fuck about what you think other people think of you. Yeah, and tying your self-worth to this glamorized image of what you think you should look like and be.
Tom struggles with body dysmorphia. It's a disorder which affects about 1 in 50 people, causing them to worry obsessively about their appearance. For Tom, this is what that used to look like.
Disordered eating, relentless like self-flagellation by way of aggressively exercising to the point where I nearly had kidney failure. I was just throwing myself against the wall in order to like be an acceptable version of myself in the mirror, which you never attain. You don't like get to that point.
One thing I love about Tom is you never know where his stories are going to take you. And this one's no exception.
I decided to become a nude model to try to fix, as if you can fix these things by doing one activity.
So you're like, I'm not comfortable in my body. I'm going to be a nude model and just face this down in a really intense way. Cool.
Yeah. I also like to do these things that are like big extremes.
How'd that go?
It was a good experience. Good to have that life story in your back pocket for a rainy day such as today. If anyone doesn't know what a nude model is, it's when you take off your clothes and people draw you for about 2 hours. It's not a sexy thing, as erotic fiction will lead you to believe. And I had no experience, and they don't give you a training course on how to be a nude model. And you'll stand in front of sort of anywhere between 8 and 15 students, and it's deathly silent, incredibly awkward, way colder than you'd ever like, no music playing. You try not to make eye contact with anyone. You just stare into the corner thinking, why am I doing this? As all you can hear is this like, chuk-chuk-chuk-chuk-chuk-chuk, and people look up from their canvas and stare aggressively at a body part and just go back to chuk-chuk-chuk-chuk-chuk.
At this stage, Tom was still drinking a lot. So even if there had been some potential in this idea of nude modelling as exposure therapy for body dysmorphia, it was kind of muted by the fact that he was wasted.
I would be so nervous going into this that I would scull a bottle of wine, be like half cut when I got there.
Which made him a little too open to suggestion.
At the end of the session, the instructor would put me into a comical position, like, I'm going to get you spread-eagled, upside down, leaning back on a beanbag on a set of stairs. So you look like an upside down starfish. Totally spread eagle. I was like, are you really sure this is like a normal pose? And he's like, yeah, just do it. And so you're just like thinking about all the life decisions that led you up to this point. And you're not even thinking about what your body looks like at that point, which is great.
It wasn't really great. Yeah, sure, there were some moments of relief from body obsession, but generally that was just because he was so cold or so uncomfortable or, you know, drunk.
It didn't fix my body dysmorphia or my body issues. You'd get little bursts of being humbled, and at the end of the class you were like, oh, that was relieving. And then immediately go back to hating what you looked like. And then I just gave it up because I was like, after 3 years and we've still not cured negative body image? What's up with that? The pay is not worth this. I quit.
So there you go, how not to cure your body issues. But there was one silver lining for Tom, which was that after 3 years of trying his own kind of extreme way to heal himself, he came full circle and realised the classic way was a better way to go.
The unfortunate truth is that, like, to solve these issues, you need to, like, go deep within yourself. And it's often a deep-seated issue. And often talking to a therapist is the most beneficial because you might realise why you think about that in the first place.
When I was researching for the Good Sex Project, I was sent a book called The Sex Ed You Never Had by an Australian psychosexologist named Chantal Otten.
It's not a psychotic sexologist.
It is what I thought. Yeah.
I mean, there is definitely a lot of neurosis in me and in my industry, but no, it's basically, I work as a sex detective.
Chantal's based in Melbourne, where her sex detective work sees her interacting with a whole lot of different people with different issues.
Might be a question or a concern or a dysfunction, or it might be just someone wanting to have a little bit more pleasure in the bedroom. And my job is to help them reach their goals of finding that pleasure.
Chantal knows all about how our feelings about our bodies can get in the way of our sex and love lives. She knows because she grew up with the exact same movies that I did.
It's like How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days and, like, I don't know, like Pretty Women and stuff, like great movies, but they're not really showing us variety in terms of size, age, background, culture.
And because so many of her clients struggle with body stuff.
Really, you know, we grew up idolizing thin white women, and, you know, I am also a thin white woman, so I kind of understand that there is a nuance there, but I also think we have been taught so much that we have to be with, you know, a six pack, and we have to have like a bit of a tan, and we have to have clear skin and no rolls and no cellulite, and that just doesn't exist. And it's so hard to get rid of that shame.
But also, people are into so many different things. I wish I'd known earlier that some people just get so turned on by chubby girls. I met someone recently who was like, I just like a square jawline. That's it. A square jawline and I'm there. I'm like, I love a broken nose, you know? Like,
love a dad bod.
All sorts of shit.
Love a dad bod. Yeah. It's like, you're so right. Like, there's so much. We all have a place. Like, we're all attractive to not just one person. Like, so many people find us, for our individual selves, attractive. A lot of us are so, like, look in the mirror and we're like, oh no, because we're so hard on ourselves, or we're bored at our own faces or our own, I don't know, fashion styles or whatever it is. But gosh, we are so many people's cup of teas. We just don't give ourselves the luxury of thinking about it in that way. You know, it might take us our whole lives to get through all of that. But I think if we can just take one step at a time to moving towards just being a little bit kinder to ourselves, you know, letting ourselves be a little bit more vulnerable, then we can start to overcome that shame or those internalized messages of us not being good enough or not attractive enough, anything that's really holding us back.
We're going to come back to Chantal, but what she was just saying made me think about Amy, who was struggling through high school with lamellar ichthyosis because she was convinced she wasn't beautiful or attractive enough to deserve love. Thankfully, it didn't take her whole life to figure out a better way. She just had to get through the high school bit. Once she was at uni, Amy made some new friends, and she started to see that the world was bigger than just the popular girl group. Slowly but surely, she began to unfurl.
And I was like, you know what, I just need to kind of not care and just put myself out there, because I've had enough of, like, hiding who I am without even knowing if there are going to be any consequences for who I am.
There's this saying that I love by the naturalist and essayist John Burroughs, leap and the net will appear.
So I did that.
She leapt.
And then I ended up meeting my lovely ex-girlfriend, and she helped me a lot. Just like her love for me and her support for me really changed my image of myself.
Maybe love will always be more fraught when it's not coming from a place of self-love. But having someone love you entirely, just the way you are, is really powerful.
I realised that I wasn't actually some sort of repulsive being. So I had a girlfriend for a few years, and then I had a boyfriend for a bit.
Oh, by the way, Amy's pansexual, meaning she's attracted to people regardless of their gender.
And then in between those times I've been dating, I had people in my life who adored me, people who wanted to moisturise my back for me in the morning, scrub my back for me in the shower, you know, and do those little things for me to make me feel comfortable, which meant a lot. These other people just not seeing a problem with it at all and not even understanding why I would and loving me regardless. It just really kind of was like a moment.
Self-love and self-worth aren't things you arrive at in a moment. It can take ages to unpick all the bullshit you've been taught and learn to accept yourself exactly as you are.
It was very slow. It took a really long time to love myself and to feel desirable and to feel beautiful, but I had to allow myself to do that first, and I wasn't allowing myself to do that for so long because I'd already written myself off, essentially.
Amy's come such a long way from her younger self. This is one of my favourite examples of how much she's changed, and it might seem silly, but I love it.
I mean, it took a while for me to even want to wear a bikini to the beach. I used to always wear a full body wetsuit because I didn't want anyone to see. And then I started like wearing bikinis, and then honestly only like this year and last year I was like, oh my gosh, I actually tan. Like, I didn't think that I would be someone for some reason that tanned, simply because I never gave myself a chance to.
If you could go back and like whisper in the ear of your teenage self from this position, what would you say?
I guess I would say that I just need to relax a little bit, that I will grow up and have sex and be desirable, and you're not some sort of freak or outcast because of a skin condition. I would say, girl, you're going to be a little hottie at some point.
Yes, Amy, thank you so much for sharing your story. After the break, we'll hear from another fabulous person who's learned self-love the hard way, and we get some great advice for how to connect with ourselves.
Hey, Chris.
Yes?
Do you want another very broad question? I've got a very broad question today.
Go on, then.
What do you know about sports?
Up the Wazz! Go the Black Caps! And don't forget Premier League football.
Oh, you do love a bit of Premier League footy, don't you? What team is it that you support again?
Oh, the current champions, Manchester City.
I think they're pronounced Arsenal. It's pronounced Arsenal.
But you know what's good about football?
Yeah, what?
They don't regulate sock height.
I'm sorry? There's a sport that regulates sock height?
Indeed there is, and it's cycling.
That's very strange. Why on earth do they regulate it?
Well, I know, but if you want to find out, you'll have to listen to the Big Stuff Quiz, wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, that's a cliffhanger indeed. The Big Stuff Quiz is brought to you by Melbourne Every Bit Different.
If you don't have time to read the in-depth stories, or you just prefer to listen instead, The Long Read From Stuff is the podcast for you. Each week we showcase one of our excellent pieces of journalism, telling important or entertaining stories from the world of crime, sport, history, culture and more. You also get to hear from the journalists themselves about how they uncovered the story and how it came to life. So for your weekly dose of long-form journalism, beautifully read, subscribe to The Long Read From Stuff wherever you get your podcasts.
So having a positive body image in today's world, in this economy, it's a big ask for anyone. But it's more difficult for some groups of people than others. For people with disabilities or health conditions, for women, gender minorities and people of colour, for people who are queer, trans, fat.
Hello.
Or maybe all of the above.
My name is Sydney. I am a queer trans guy. I'm short and fat and bald and
like doing queer things.
Oh, I love Sydney. Let's just get that on the record straight away.
I grew up in a small South Island town where it wasn't okay to be queer at all. I was born, the doctors told my parents, it's a girl. Everyone was excited because I only had brothers. And I grew up quite happily being the kind of odd one out in the family, being the only girl, and I say that in inverted commas, because I thought, you know, this is just what it is.
Now, all kids are weirdos, and that's why kids are so great. And usually it's best not to read too much into their strange behaviours, because they're not always clues about how they're going to turn out. But this one does kind of feel that way.
I had this like weird scenario when I was a little kid where I'd get out of the shower and I'd pretend I was in a saloon in a like cowboy situation where I go up to the bar and I'd order a shot, and the shot was like mouthwash. And then I'd shave my face, and my shaving my face was brushing my teeth.
Amazing.
Like things like that where I just didn't click until I clicked, and I'm like, oh, baby, you've always been this way.
When it came to crushes and sex stuff, Sydney was a late bloomer.
In high school and stuff, I didn't understand why my friends were into boys. Like, it was boring and stupid, and reading comics and books are way better. So that was that for a while. And then I kind of started to feel feelings, like love feelings and romantic feelings and sexual feelings. And I think the safest thing for me around that was just, okay, I'll fall in love with other people and they won't love me back because I don't want that.
That's too scary.
It's too much.
This is like what Amy talked about how she was just too scared to deal with the people who had crushes on her. And Sydney was actually doing his own version of that shrinking thing that Amy did as well.
I feel like there's this idea of being in the closet, and for me, I don't have a sense that my closet was ever made of anything other than glass. Like, it's very clear that I'm a queer person, and even before I knew what that meant, I just knew I should be invisible. Like, if my closet was see-through, I needed to be invisible.
Talk to older queer people about what they'd say to their younger selves, and a lot of the time, one of those things is it gets better. There's actually a whole organisation called the It Gets Better Project, which is founded by US sex advice guru Dan Savage, who we're going to hear from throughout the series, and his partner Terry. And the organisation aims to help queer youth through the horror of the high school years.
So it wasn't until I got to uni where I was like, okay, I'm ready now. Someone who I was friends with just happened to mention that he was a trans guy, and I was just like, ah. And I just didn't know it had existed. Like, I knew that trans women existed, but I didn't know it went the other way. And as soon as I heard that, I was just like, oh, okay, well, that's it. That's me done, okay. I was like, I'm definitely queer and I'm definitely trans, and this makes sense in a way that just everything kind of just like planets aligning.
It's one thing to figure out who you are, which is huge, by the way. A lot of people never do that. But it's another thing to tell people about it.
I waited a long time between knowing I was trans, telling everyone, and I wanted to use he, him pronouns. And I was like, okay. I don't know what words I'm going to use. I don't know how I'm going to tell people. I don't know how this is going to go socially and how I'm going to do this, but I know what I am now. And then I just kind of started doing what made sense to me and what was comfortable for me, and now I'm a fat, balding man who has a lot of hair in weird places.
I'm going to give you a super quick backgrounder here on something called gender dysphoria, which is experienced by some, but not all, trans and non-binary people. According to the DSM-5, which is like the diagnostic bible for psychiatrists, gender dysphoria is the distress felt by those whose experience of their gender doesn't align with how society perceives and treats them. What's interesting to me is the focus on the distress. That's the issue, not the gender stuff itself. So presumably, if we were a more welcoming, inclusive, non-judgmental society, gender dysphoria would largely fade away.
Yeah. I feel like for me, anyway, the struggle is not being born wrong. The struggle is being told I was born wrong. And just the harshness of people's reactions to you when they are scared or don't know what to do. It's like my fatness, right? Like, I talk about being fat all the time, and quite often I'll get a reaction from people, oh, no, you're not that fat. Or you're just chubby. Or you're round. Or something like that. And I was like, no, I'm fat, and I don't see that as a bad thing, in the same way that I'm trans, and I don't see that as a bad thing. And usually the negative reactions is a sign that maybe you see it as a bad thing. Or you're uncomfortable with fatness. Or you're uncomfortable with transness.
And not all of this discomfort comes from straight people.
I feel like there's some weird things in gay men's circles where there's like extreme body yuckness and body policing around like muscles and whiteness and skinniness.
Basically those same tired old beauty and body norms.
And I also think there's some things within trans guy communities around fatness that I feel sad about that equates curviness with femininity. In a way that's negative. So, like, in order to pass as cis, there's a lot of trans guys who want to make themselves really skinny. And that makes me sad as a kind of femi trans person. And it makes me sad as a fat person because, like, I feel like actually my hairy tummy is quite mask, actually. And my big butt is nice. And I've gotten good feedback on that.
Same, Sydney. The journey to self-love is different for everyone, with its own unique complications, but also rewards.
So I just think about trans euphoria. Like, what is it when I feel fucking great in my body? What is it when I feel like, yeah, my transness makes me special and unique and my Leo radiations radiate out. Like, I don't want to be cis. I've never wanted to be cis. I thought I was because I was told I was so many times. And when I realized that I could be trans, I was like, yes, please. I'm on that team. Like, so many of trans experiences are shaped by cis fears and cis negativities around us that actually I want to reverse that and be like, actually, the trans experience is a deep commitment to our own sense of joy and belonging in ourselves. There's like so many of us out there, and we've been here for decades and decades, and that's what's the kind of sadness about it, is that like the trans stories that get told about us are all the silly, like, sad, shitty stories instead of like the super hot queer sex that we're having all the time.
And the euphoria.
And the euphoria, exactly.
We're going to hear all about the super hot queer sex Sydney's having in episode 4. In the last episode, sex researcher and author Emily Nagoski shared some advice.
In your process of starting from scratch, start from here. Center pleasure.
She actually had more to add to that.
Sexuality is not about what you do or who you do it with or where or in how often, which positions you do it in, or even how many orgasms you have. It's whether or not you like the experiences your body is having. If you like it, you are doing it right. And if you don't, then it's time to see if there are things that you do like.
If you like it, you're doing it right. I love that. But of course, it's not as simple as it sounds. Find out what you like can feel really vague. How are we supposed to know what we don't know yet? Listening to this series is going to help you with that, because most of you, hopefully, are going to hear about at least one thing that you hadn't thought about before. If your body or your brain reacts with a little, pay attention. Because when it comes to centering pleasure and figuring out what you like, there's one person you can trust more than anyone else to guide you through. You.
Let's practice on our own pleasure. What does pleasure feel like in my body? How do I access it in my way?
This is Sonia Waters. She's a somatic sexologist based in Wanaka, who we're going to return to throughout the series because she is incredible at what she does. And she's somewhat of an expert on the topic of self-love. She's actually writing her thesis about it right now.
There's a whole bunch of shame around masturbation. So I'm like, I don't use that word anymore. And embodied self-pleasure, ESP, is kind of like this lovely little acronym that makes us smile.
When you think about masturbation, probably a whole lot of things come to mind. Maybe you feel shame, like Sonia just said. Maybe it's not that deep. It's just a tool or a way to get off to sleep or decrease stress. But I'm guessing that for most of you, the point is orgasm, not with ESP.
It's not a goal. In fact, if you orgasm, that's great, but it's not the point of it.
So ESP is about slowing down, being present and aware of not just your body, but your emotions, your breath, sound, movement. So being curious and avoiding this impulse we have to just rush to orgasm.
On a pleasure scale from 1 to 10, if we say 10 is the peak experience, I'm going to do gendered stereotypes for a moment, but mostly guys will come to orgasm really quite quickly. They'll really know what 7, 8, 9 and 10 feels like, and then boom, they're off to sleep. For them, the practice on embodied self-pleasure then is playing around 2, 3, 4, 5 at the most. Where are the subtleties that I can feel in my body? Where are the sensations? What is the touch? What's something different and new? And this helps guys expand from, you know, maybe 30 seconds or 3 minutes to orgasm to not being hijacked by their own, like, gone, expanding their language. For female-bodied people, actually giving yourself the time and the space and the permission to play in the 7, 8, 9, and 10, if you like.
Maybe that means bringing yourself close to orgasm and then edging away and then doing that again and again.
Time in the female body is a real thing if she's given the spaciousness and the pleasure that she wants, then her body can come into arousal.
I think masturbation is quite a big umbrella term for a lot of different activities that you can do that actually feel good.
We're going to finish this episode with a little homework assignment from Chantal Otten. Because what makes you hornier than homework? Chantal's book includes this awesome little pleasure plan, which unfolds over 7 days.
Essentially, they're about feeling sensation, and they're really about engaging in your senses, giving yourself that time to honour your body and honour the way that you feel within yourself on a deeper level than I guess what we're typically taught in terms of porn or movies. So night one, we have just having a bath, chilling out, feeling your sheets against your skin, really breathing as well. But it's about tuning into how your body feels when you run your fingers up and down it and work in circular motions around your genitals before focusing on them.
On night two, keep it slow and figure out your intention.
My goal for night two was really about figuring out what you wanted to achieve. So that might be, do I want to achieve better sleep through masturbation? Do I want to achieve greater orgasms or more orgasms? Is it about being calmer? So it's really about finding your self-pleasure purpose and then really committing to 20 minutes of personal pleasure.
Night three is all about setting the mood.
And so it's about, what do I want to do to feel good and be the perfect lover for your self-pleasure? You light your candles, you put on sensual music. Maybe you want to have a cup of tea that makes you feel good or a glass of wine. It might be about getting a really nice lube out, getting your fingers or your vibe, and thinking of something erotic. One of the things that I really like a lot of my patients to do is keeping a diary of their erotic experiences from the past or their fantasies, and they start to create their own booklet of things that make them feel really excited and erotic.
Okay, you're getting warmed up now, starting to feel yourself.
Night four is about nude dancing. So a lot of us don't appreciate the things that our bodies can do. We tend to focus on the negative. There's so much that is wonderful about our bodies. You know, they carry us, they're beautiful. So night four is about taking the opportunity to shake off and dance off a lot of shame. I think erotic energy can come from dancing.
Some people even film themselves for this one so they can be like, damn, I look good. But that's not compulsory. That would absolutely ruin it for me. On night five, shout out to the feminist consciousness raising groups of the 70s who did this first. You guessed it, we're getting out our mirrors.
And that's, again, about putting on more music and saying, yeah, I love this part of myself. You know, maybe it's about self-pleasuring in the mirror too, so you can see the way that your genitals also interact to different types of touch. A lot of people, you know, have never done that before.
On night six, slide under the sheets in the nude and honour and embrace your body like you would a lover. And night seven
is about your imagination. So it's about using audio to turn yourself on. It's putting essential oils on your skin, not getting too heavy-handed, obviously, but really just relaxing and listening to erotic literature.
That might be one of Chantal's own sexy stories, which you can find on Spotify. But there's also so many apps, like Cheeks, that's C-H-E-E-X, or Quinn, with two N's, or Dipsy. They do cost money, but some of them are so good. They are definitely worth checking out, especially if visual porn doesn't do it for you. There's also erotic meditation.
Feel the tingliness, the pleasure, the fullness, the warmth, and inhale.
There are loads of those on YouTube of varying quality, and there's some of them on the apps as well.
And I think it's really good because it actually forces you to slow down. I think a lot of people really rush towards their penis or their clitoris when they are masturbating, and they don't learn about all the other parts of their body that do actually feel incredible. So erotic meditation is a really good one to help people feel not only different sensations, but also learn different ways of self-pleasuring as well.
Maybe you don't need any excuse to practice more self-pleasure. But if you do, if your feelings about it are complicated, remind yourself that self-touch is totally normal and natural and really beneficial. Masturbation can release tension and reduce stress. It helps you sleep better. It can help improve your self-esteem and body image. It can increase focus, relieve menstrual cramps, and boost your mood. And it's enough to want to do these things purely for yourself, but the benefits can also roll over into your relationships. Here's Sonia Waters again.
Once we take the focus off the goal of orgasm or off the goal of an erection, once we actually can regulate our own erotic system, we can come into alignment with our partner much more easily.
You probably know this feeling of being so focused on orgasm or erection that you totally forget to notice how your body's feeling. The pleasure your body is feeling right now.
It's like looking at a light. If you look at the light bulb, you can't see anything other than that, and you can't see anything. Actually, look around the candle flame at everything else that is around it, and all of a sudden you will see the light in the candle. But you look at that spotlight called orgasm or erection or whatever it is that I can't attain, it'll be forever blinded. Soften the light, soften the touch, slow the down. Slow down everything, play with the whole body.
Earlier in the episode, our trans friend Sydney said he felt like the closet he was in when he was young was made of glass. Like everyone could see through it. And to feel safe, he needed to be invisible too. I think the glass closet is actually a beautiful metaphor for how a lot of people feel. Like they need to dull or shrink themselves in order to be loved. But you don't. You are worthy of love exactly as you are. You don't need to be thin, or beautiful, or successful, whatever that means, or sexually active, or in a relationship, or cis, or smooth-skinned or white or able-bodied. You don't have to be anything other than exactly what you are. Of course, we still need to work on ourselves, every one of us. There'll be times when you mess up and you need to accept that and try harder. But you can do that from a place of love and self-compassion, understanding that everybody has things to work on. No one's perfect, and we're all just doing our best. Instead of this bullshit focus on shrinking and fading, why don't we focus instead on growth? On getting bigger, taking up more space. Because you know what happens to a glass closet when you choose to expand? It shatters. Coming up in the next episode of The Good Sex Project, a couple of New Zealand's favourite Alices take us along for the ride as they shatter their own glass closets.
They used to have a group chat between them where they would just send photos of me from my social media back and forth to each other and be like, look at this big gay. What's she doing? What is she doing? Really strong memories of having big crush on this boy in primary school and him and I playing basketball. And that being the origin of a real strong sexual fantasy for mine is that I would play one-on-one with somebody and then it would devolve into sex.
That's in episode 2B of The Good Sex Project, Who the Fuck is Alice? Thank you for listening to The Good Sex Project, a series made with the support of New Zealand On Air. If you want to get in touch with me or with the team, please send us a message. You can do that on Instagram at goodsexproject or email goodsexproject@gmail.com. We love to hear from you, and we are preparing for a second season. So get in touch if you have something you really want to hear about or if you have a story of your own to share. And of course, if you're enjoying the series, tell your friends and give us some stars and some nice words on your favourite podcast platform. The Good Sex Project was written and developed by me, Melody Thomas. Our producer and audio editor is Kirsten Johnstone from PopSock Media. Phil Brownlee recorded me in the studio, and our sound mix is by Mark Chesterman. The beautiful soundtrack music is by Paddy Fred, with additional music by the Wellington band Womb. Find both of them on Bandcamp.